Today on Talk to Tea, we explore trauma-informed practice with Allison Quinn. Allison draws on 30 years' experience as a clinical counselor. But early in her career, she dipped away from the mainstream with her integrated mind-body-spirit way of working with clients. She has a long-held belief that the body's language is the path to liberation. Her Zen-like nature creates a safe space to explore a fascinating and timely topic. Allison, thank you so much for being with us today. I'm thrilled that you're our guest.
Pleasure.
Yeah. Allison, you were born in Zimbabwe and you trained as a social worker in South Africa, bringing a really incredible perspective into our Canadian culture, having that background. Mm-hmm. You were an adjunct professor at UBC School of Social Work and teaching in the Department of Educational and Counseling Psychology. You've been a counselor for 30 years, specializing in group therapy, trauma therapy, and conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. You're also the incredible writer of a self-help book, Reclaim Your Soul, Your Path to Healing, and which builds on trauma-informed principles, which we're here to discuss and kibitz about today.
Great, great, excellent.
Yes. Yeah. You've also published a couple of other books.
Yeah, Experiential Unity Theory and Model is really aligns with trauma-informed practice principles. And it's a model that's gaining increasing popularity. I'm teaching it in the level 2 and level 3 workshops, and also demonstrating it in the level 1 workshops on Eventbrite, on trauma-informed practice training. And it's a really exciting model because it's doing what, it's getting to the healing, which is the key piece with any model, but it's getting to it in a very creative, and I would say in a very sensitive, non-confrontational way. It's a very gentle form of counseling and is really illuminating.
Mm-hmm.
People working using my model, because you're drawing a picture of how you feel inside at the deepest level. Mm-hmm. And so that's really profound, to see someone construct a picture of the innermost struggle that you're experiencing right now. So yes, that's essentially my model. And then I've also written a novel set in Zimbabwe. So yeah, and I've written other novels, but they're not published yet. So
yet to come, a teaser.
yet to come. And actually there's a new another teaser, in that I'm presently writing on deadline a new version of Experiential Unity Model, threading it through with neuroscience, and mm-hmm. making the present book is written for group therapy, but it applies to individual therapy. But the new book will be, there's a section on individual therapy and group therapy and all the neuroscience. So it's like right at the front of the field.
Nice. Lovely. Allison, you know, in addition to listening to you talk as though, you know, you were born with models in your head.
I was.
Incredible.
I mean, two social workers for parents. So do you know what I mean?
Ah. A lot of
early psychological training.
Yeah, interesting. And
yeah, really two extraordinary parents who, I mean, my father was practicing yoga, I mean, in Zimbabwe. I don't even know how he got his hands on a yoga book in Zimbabwe, seeing as the library was pretty limited. Yeah. And my mother was consulting her naturopathic books. So yeah, I was born into an alternative thinking family.
Yeah.
Born into a climate, a cultural climate, whereby, you know, spirituality was very much front and center in the everyday. And I was learning alternative ways of being in the world from the local indigenous population of the Shona people. And so, yeah, I had a lot of training, sort of unconscious training early on. And I think that's why I was able to cook a model.
To cook a model. I love that. Thanks for that. Fascinating, experiential. And also, I really picked up on what you said is that unconscious learning, unconscious training.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Some of the most powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, not what you've been taught, but what you've just picked up from your body, from just, seeing the world differently.
Fascinating. Amazing. And in addition to, taking that experience and turning it into something brilliant and incredible that can be shared and taught and trained, I also read a few of your testimonials. I've also had the pleasure of experiencing your trauma-informed practice certification. Was delighted to take that program with you. And my big sense of you, and this is reflected in your testimonials, is, it, quote unquote, you're like a Zen stick. There's a warmth and a safety about you that really just makes this conversation, what could I say any more than safe to venture into, both unpacking your, my own, sitting in your program, experiences of trauma and working that through, but also contemplating, the impact with clients and even friends and family,
Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I come at it with so much heart and passion, but I also come at it with having worked through, my own trauma. And also really realizing how much trauma impacts our lives. And, I'm saying that sort of across the board, because we think only the people that are knocking on the door of the mental health center or, repeatedly knocking on the door of their therapists, that only they have trauma. But actually under COVID, what we're learning is, what does trauma need to rise? How I see trauma is an implicit memory. So this is the neuroscientists letting us know how trauma is held in our bodies. So something may have occurred at 5 years old. Say, for instance, you saw your parents fighting, something happened where you felt completely overwhelmed. So that emotion that you felt then, so say it was helplessness, you couldn't fix your parents, right? So say it was helplessness. So that helplessness now sits in your body. So say it's your shoulders, like your shoulders are never really comfortable. There's always a little twinge in your shoulders, or maybe it's your stomach. Maybe it presents in IBS or something like that. And so that this interesting thing about trauma that I didn't realize until I sort of looked at my own life and then looked at the people that I was working with, looked at their lives, is say, for instance, helplessness has been sitting in your body since 5 years old. You are now unconsciously attracting situations that will trigger helplessness. Now that's living torture.
Yes.
This is the very emotion you want to avoid. If you had to choose from a whole smorgasbord of feelings, this is the one that you want to avoid. Because at 5 years old, when you felt it, you had no explanation. You didn't have the adult rationalizations. So you were so vulnerable when you felt it. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine the intensity of that helplessness. Mm. Now, say, for instance, you attract a partner that has, say, you know, concerns around drinking,
mm-hmm.
and you feel helpless, right, to help the person. You can see the damage that it's causing them and how it's impacting their lives. But so that same helplessness that you felt at 5 years old is now going to be triggered.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, that's why I'm so passionate about the world getting on to trauma, because the suffering is so immense.
Mm-hmm.
And when that is triggered, you can't even think straight. Yeah. I mean, your whole body is activated. You go into fight or flight, or you freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And those ways of being in the world, I mean, that can keep you working for 16 hours a day for 5 months. I mean, as long as your body can handle it, and then burn out, or the freeze can have you immobilized in home, not leaving your apartment. So you can understand under COVID
mm-hmm.
just how intense the situation is, because it's all the fear and uncertainty of COVID. Those emotions are like an earthquake under our bodies, and they're just shaking it all up and it's rising to the surface. And so it's so critical when it rises to the surface that we do something effective, because otherwise we can get stuck in patterns of behavior like obsessive compulsive, perfectionism, procrastination for years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can lose years of our life and the fullness of our life if we're not paying attention to trauma. It you know, to me, simply put, it's our path to liberation.
Mm.
So that is why I'm so passionate, because I work with people who get on the path. My model is very effective. And it's non-intrusive. We're drawing drawings, and you don't have to. I think what people fear when they go for counseling and talk therapy has encouraged people to talk about the thing that they find most painful.
Yeah.
And that's not helpful.
Mm.
Say, for instance, with my drawings, what we do is say we draw the two parents having an argument. And here's the child, and we draw this little child. And then we just put a heart on her and we say, what is she feeling? So we don't need the details.
Mm.
We just want to release the trauma through getting to all the feelings. And so actually we can move through trauma with some ease and grace if we're following a model that honors the body and doesn't encourage too much talk therapy, therefore too much detail, and then an activation of the trauma.
Mm. One of the things that really struck me about what you just said, and I also heard you talk about it, and it really sat with me, was the re-traumatization of talking through the trauma. And so the idea or the practice of drawing in place of talking through, and really hear you encouraging, you know, honing in not on the story of and re-traumatizing it. I also heard you address the practitioner working with that individual. You know, is also subject to traumatization or a re-traumatization based on the individual's story. So in your model, in the drawings, and, you know, I'm going to ask you to delve in a little deeper in a few minutes here in terms of the how of that and what you're inviting the world to consider beyond this talk therapy approach is, just being able to draw that heart actually and pointing to the feelings, and then obviously there's a little more to it, releasing those emotions rather than needing to talk to release. So I really love, and that really sat with me as a profound moment in your teaching.
And I think that's actually a bit of an earthquake to the field.
Yeah.
Because, you know, how Western psychotherapy has developed is talk therapy. And it's not to say it's one or the other, but we have to find ways to bring in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because trauma is in the body. So if we're not bringing in the body, we're not actually releasing trauma. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that's the key piece is, you know, there's lots of models of talk therapy, building skills, building, you know, coping technique. Yeah. There's lots of good stuff going on, but it can't just be talk therapy.
Yeah.
It's got to find, you know, whatever model you're working with, you need to find ways to bring in the body. Now, I do bring in the body through mindfulness, but you can't just toss in a bit of mindfulness, right?
Mm-hmm.
You actually need to delve into the body. So mm-hmm. using the mindfulness as a vehicle to connect with implicit memory. So, I mean, what I've seen with some models is you just toss a bit of mindfulness in the beginning and then a bit at the end. And then you think, well, I've brought in the body. No. It's we need to engage the deeper processes of the body. So using the mindfulness, almost like a fishing line to retrieve implicit memory in the body. Mm-hmm. In the form of embodied emotion. So that helplessness sitting in your stomach, when we breathe deeply and we use a big chunk of the first part of the session just to breathe and feel and go into the body's language is sensation and tension and feeling. Mm-hmm. So we've got to meet the body where it's at. I mean, if we're doing a whole bunch of analysis, we're actually not moving. We need to move into the body's language.
Mm.
And so now we're tuning. So what I ask when I'm working with people, you know, let's both close our eyes, right? So I'm also sensing and intuiting with the person. And what are they feeling deep in their body? And let's name it if possible. Mm. So say it's helplessness. Then I ask the client, well, what's the helplessness about? And so quite often clients just get a flash of an image. Like mm-hmm. they know, even if it takes them back to adolescence, right? They come yeah. up with images. But even if they don't, they have a felt sense. And that's what we want. It's not just, you know, a lot of talk therapy models, you know, they give you a page of feelings, but that's not what we want. We want the felt sense of the experience.
Yeah.
Because, you know, my experience of confusion will be different from yours.
Yeah.
So we want the body's interpretation of that feeling. So that's when, what I mean by going into the body, really getting to the wisdom
mm-hmm.
sitting in the body. And what I've learned through my own healing, cranial sacral therapy, mm-hmm. and my model works the same way, is the body teaches us what needs to be released right now.
Mm.
So, you know, it's not me as a clinician coming in and saying, you know, this client really needs to address this issue right now.
Yeah.
Because that's impositional counseling.
Yeah.
And when you look at, you know, all of the anti-oppressive practice issues, and this is particularly hot right now. I mean, given mm-hmm. All the discrimination that has happened on so many levels, it's so important that any way that we work aligns with an anti-oppressive practice.
Yeah.
And what that means is aligning with the person's body, not me deciding where the therapy should go, but the person's body teaching me. So I think that's what I find so inspiring about working this way is I'm now a student of the person's somatic experience.
I love that.
So that puts me in a student role, you know, where I'm learning, where I'm bringing curiosity, humility, my own vulnerability to that moment as a way of deeply honoring what's held in that person's body.
Amazing. You said something earlier when we were, you know, warming up and getting ready to come on air.
Yeah.
And you said you really encourage people being self-propelled toward their own healing.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, there's so much we can do if we're listening deeply to our body. So, you know, what lifts you?
Mm-hmm.
What soothes your body? What calms your body? What stills your mind? You know, so that's where you need to go, right? So just for all of us to spend time really reflecting, because what works for one doesn't work for another.
Mm-hmm.
And there is so much, like some people really need to move. I'm someone who needs to move. So, you know, Kundalini yoga for me is really powerful because it's very, very active.
Yeah.
You know, throwing yourself about, you know, it's kind
Qigong.
Kind of celebratory dancing, you know, just flailing about, right?
It's good
for my body. My body needs like a big shake up to release. Other people can do it more quietly.
Yes.
Go into nature and meditate. So really learning what soothes and calms and uplifts your body. And your body's just saying, do more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other piece is starting to really, now what I've learned in my, you know, over 30 years of living in Canada, one of the things that I feel I've been up against as a therapist right from when I arrived, and this wasn't my own cultural training, and every culture has helpful or unhelpful cultural messages.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most unhelpful cultural messages that I've heard from clients repeatedly in this culture is, I shouldn't feel the way that I do.
Oh, yeah.
Now that is so profoundly undermining.
Mm-hmm.
Because you and I tomorrow might feel despair.
Mm-hmm.
We might feel tremendous sadness.
Mm-hmm.
We might feel hurt, betrayal, a whole range of feelings. And if I have in my mind, if I'm programmed culturally to say to myself, I shouldn't feel the way that I do, already I'm rejecting part of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that splitting off is what encourages a process of people losing themselves to distraction. They're trying to distract away from these feelings that on a kind of subliminal societal level, they're encouraged not to feel.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I'm saying, you know, and that's actually why I wrote Reclaim Your Soul.
I was going to ask you. I'm glad you got there.
That was the impulse, because it was actually out of pure frustration.
Yeah.
Confusion as how could I get the message across?
Yeah.
Because one of the things I was saying repeatedly in groups is, if you feel sad, there are so many good reasons for it.
Mm-hmm.
If someone else was to walk in your shoes and live the life you've lived, they would feel the same sadness that you do.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm always trying to encourage people to feel it, to heal it.
Yeah.
And there's this kind of idea, cultural idea, that somehow we can analyze our way to healing,
mm-hmm.
that we can bypass the messy feeling part. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't believe it.
So straight into it we go.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I have a really quick question. I wanted to just have you touch, because I know our audience consists of, people in organizations that are in teams, they're in that organizational setting, or, clients that I've encountered in business. And, one of the things that I am constantly supporting clients with is that, they have, say, for example, they've got a heavy workload. Maybe they're doing, someone's been let go or transferred or something, and mm-hmm. they find themselves with their, with an increased workload.
Right.
And it just triggered for me when you were saying that, it's that experience of, I should be able to do this.
Yeah, that's right. That's
which
right.
Ran synonymous with what you were saying there about that not allowing those feelings.
Yeah.
And, so if we could, if you could speak to that just a little bit, I feel like your advice will be the same, but I'm going to be quiet and hear what you have to say. What would you say to them in those circumstances?
Well, your body is letting you know whether it's an appropriate load or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, what might be leaching into it is your own embodied emotions, right? Mm-hmm. So say, let's go back to helplessness. So mm-hmm. say you get a lot of work, but now helplessness is triggered. So it's actually not so easy to focus on the work because you're now triggered with your helplessness. So a lot of it is really becoming aware of how your body's reacting to your work situation, for example. How is your body reacting to your boss, to your colleagues?
Yeah.
Are any of your team triggering your trauma?
Mm.
What can you do about that? I mean, do you need to assert yourself in some situation? Because is the person, how they're treating you, very similar to how you got treated in your earlier years? Or say if, for instance, you were bullied mm-hmm. As a teenager, are you getting the same tone from your colleague at work? And it's triggering that part of yourself.
Yeah.
So again, this is where we really need to get creative. We don't want to blame our work colleagues because
right.
that keeps us very stuck and going deeper and deeper into a quagmire where our trauma is activated, their trauma is activated, and we just have one massive flare up.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's going to affect productivity.
Yes.
It's absolutely going to affect because you don't have the same concentration.
Yes.
If your trauma is being triggered. So really trusting what your body is feeling. If there's a particular person that's triggering you, what could you do? Sometimes we always think we'll talk to the person, but it may or may not be appropriate. First of all, becoming aware of what feelings are triggered.
Mm-hmm.
When you're around this person, then looking at those particular feelings, let's say helplessness, disrespected, and distrust,
yes.
right?
Yes.
So do those have a long line in your body? And what I mean is, do those go back to earlier experiences of the original trauma?
Mm.
And if they do, it's your opportunity to, you can write a letter to those feelings. Helplessness, I'm sick of you showing up here, you're showing up in the workplace, I'm trying to be professional, so there's all sorts of creative ways you can do a drawing. I mean, that's where experiential unity comes in.
Yeah.
You can go to my self-help book, read helplessness in my self-help book and see if you get some insights there. But mm-hmm. essentially start to work with the feelings that are getting triggered in the workplace.
Yeah.
So this is really relevant for, because what I've seen in workplaces is lots of people's trauma is activated, and now there is a dance of attrition where everyone is getting locked in. People are getting more defended, more rigid, more conflict is happening. So it has a profound impact on the workplace.
Yeah. I know with certainly spending more time at home and working from home, and, you know, some individuals that happen to be single are, you know, living alone. And it seems that the intensity to self-reflect, there's more minutes alone.
Yes, that's
less
right.
Time spent with coworkers, which in relationship you might be distracted away from self. But now there's that intensity of, you know, time and minutes spent alone so that you're self-reflecting more.
Yeah.
That, you know, it can be really confronting to sit with oneself if you're not, if you haven't developed a muscle in that.
No, that's right. And even a tolerance. So maybe even the first piece is writing out what you feel. Just straightforward journal writing. I feel confused, lost, scared, and worried. And just tearing up your piece of paper if you don't want it hanging around. But just honoring the feeling and releasing it.
Yeah.
So just starting. My first chapter of my self-help book looks at what feelings want us to do. So it's from the point of view of feelings. So now the feelings are telling us, you know, what would be helpful to get them, because they're sick of being trapped in this human body, right?
Yeah.
They want release. So, you know, what can we do for the feelings trapped in our body? So really looking, and that's, you know, in the workshops, we're looking at tapping, we're looking at movement, breath work. We're looking at, you know, other modalities that we don't teach, but we talk about, you know, just the wide range of modalities out there that are trauma informed, that do engage the body, and that are helpful for release.
Yeah.
Knowing that it's different things for different people.
Yeah, I think that's super key, is knowing that different things for different people. And that's where we come back to your earlier teaching, which, or your tip, was that, you know, being a student of, we can be a student of our own bodies, in addition to practitioners, students of, you know, the individual before us. So I really love that. It's really sticking with me for sure. We're talking all about trauma informed, and I know you've touched on it several times as we've spoken, but if you could bring a meaning or definition and capture that for our listeners, what would you say to that? How would you define it?
Oh, so, well, I should really read a quote from our workshop.
Please do.
Okay. Yes, I will. So I can read a couple of quotes. So Bonnie Badenoch talks about any experience of fear and or pain that doesn't have the support it needs to be digested and integrated into the flow of our developing brains. A quote on collective trauma refers to the psychological reactions to a traumatic event that affect an entire society. Intergenerational trauma, when trauma is ignored and there's no support for dealing with it, the trauma will be passed from one generation to the next. So those are just some quotes.
Thanks for that. Collective trauma. We certainly in this last year or so have experienced our share of collective trauma, and, you know, it continues day after day. You know, thinking about India today and sending my love and, you know, just want healing for that country, for Brazil, and, you know, that collective Trauma, we breathe as one. It's, we like to think of ourselves as separate, but we are entirely not separate, are we?
Well, and the key piece is systemic issues are part of the collective trauma, right? Systemic racism, yes. Systemic discrimination. I mean, I bore witness to the impact of colonization on the indigenous people of Zimbabwe, the Shona people, and the Matabele people. So these systemic issues actually impact the body profoundly and create that lack of safety in the body. And so that is, that's alongside your family and your cultural experiences and your lived experience. Now you have these other systemic issues also creating reactions in your body. So yeah, the field is incredibly complex.
Yes.
And so, you know, our trainings look at, you know, what are the models? How do we look at the neurobiology of trauma? Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, we explore the window of tolerance, how we can stay within our window of tolerance, which means to manage the symptoms and the reactions in our body. And then we look at the different models, and then I demonstrate my model. So mm-hmm. that's sort of, that's a broad brush of level one. Mm-hmm. And the level two is where I teach my model. And then level three, is where people are really kind of learning it at a deep level.
Yeah. I love the opportunity that you presented in the way that you presented it with the levels, that, you know, it was about digesting the information and the experiential and the opportunity to work through it. I super appreciated and, you know, hear your invitation often in my head to actually practice and dive in and to not be afraid of it. I think when we hear the word trauma sometimes, especially if maybe perhaps you're, you know, in an industry where, you know, I think you and I talk about this a lot in our professions. Mm. However, if you're from an industry where not exactly in your everyday conversation, that it can be a daunting word, trauma.
No, that's true. That's true. But if we just start to take it to a feeling level, you know, what feelings am I feeling in my body right now? And just throughout the day, just because, you know, what I like to, we make it really complicated.
Yeah.
But what I like to think about is a baby knows how to heal.
Mm.
And how does a baby heal? A baby feels what it feels so intensely, like it's just totally taken over its world, right? You look at a baby crying, every ounce of that baby is crying. I mean, it looks like even the toes are crying, right?
Yeah.
And so the baby just knows how to get the release. The baby's not saying, you know what? I'm just going to swallow these tears and this sadness right now, or this frustration, whatever the baby's feeling, and I'll kind of release it in 5 days or 5 years. A baby doesn't do that. A baby says, I'm going to release it right here, right now. I don't care if we're in the middle of a supermarket.
Yeah.
I don't care what other people think.
Yeah.
I'm just going for it. I want the healing from my body right now. So I know, yell and scream, whatever I need to do, you know, kick, whatever it is to get it out of my body. So that's essentially what we want to remember. And we remember healing our bodies when we were young. We have that somatic memory.
Yeah.
So it's really just aligning with your body and befriending your body. It's got so much to teach. Well, I just feel my body has so much to teach me.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I can Absolutely. Think that, oh, you know, I've healed that. It is no way it's going to show up again. And then what happens? It It shows up.
Yeah.
So I think I know, but actually I don't know. Like my body knows, and I get inklings through dreams of what my body's processing, or I get, you know, I sense
yes.
the tension, or, but really the body's in charge. And quite often what people say is I've healed that stuff. And what I've learned is that feelings and experiences come in layers. So say if we had a very tough experience, maybe there's 10 layers of it. Mm-hmm. So maybe we've dealt with level 1 to 6. Well, that means level 7 can rise.
Yes.
And it's from the body.
Yes.
So, you know, I asked my physio, when do I get this beautiful flat line? You know, when do I get to this absolutely extraordinary plateau, you know?
Yeah.
And he said to me, maybe half an hour before you die, you know? I mean, so I haven't experienced any flat lines. So, you know, I think it's just becoming more confident with what helps us release.
Yes.
So, and developing a lifestyle that doesn't numb the feelings. That's such a critical piece.
Yes.
And yeah. I've dealt with that, you know, well, I've addressed that, or parts of that, in both Experiential Unity Model and Reclaim Your Soul. The chapter 2 is the cultural traps to healing.
Mm-hmm.
Busyness being, you know, a badge of honor in this society. I mean, yeah. If you, you know, you are someone, oh, how have you been? I've been so busy, right?
Yes.
Well, that means you could have lost yourself in that busyness. You could have lost connection with mm-hmm. your body. So now you're a bit of an autumn leaf blowing around in the wind.
Yes. So
you might have got busy and seduced yourself that this is a good thing. But actually, if you've lost contact with your body, you're free floating right now. You're actually really vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, we have to look at stimulants. We have to look at speed.
Yes.
The speed of our living. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing about COVID is it's changed the rhythm of this society. Everyone's moving more slowly.
Yes.
You know, we have to look at some of these other drivers. Cerebral communication, talking with people, but not putting any feelings in them.
Yes. In
conversation. I mean, head it's a disconnected head-to-head conversation, but mm-hmm. where's the heart, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and the heart, yeah, and the depth. So, yeah, so exploring the cultural traps to healing mm-hmm. is also a key piece.
Absolutely key. And, you know, 100% in terms of, you know, COVID has given us an opportunity. The world has slowed down, and, you know, almost been forced to engage once again in less and yet more meaningful exchanges. Is yeah. what my experience has been anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And increasing yeah. the depth of connection with ourselves
yes.
and others. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tremendously healing.
Yeah, profound, profound. And again, it keeps coming back to, and if you're not accustomed to that, you and I engage in this kind of dialogue all the time. And yet, you know, if you're someone that doesn't, the key is to allow yourself to begin.
Yeah.
Yeah. At the risk of running down a rabbit hole with you and off on another great conversation, but I thought that maybe just, I'm curious about anxiety. We're, you know, seeing more and more and more people, you know, coming forward, gripped with anxiety, panic attacks. Mm. Curious about your thoughts and, you know, on that.
I mean, what I say with anxiety and stress and overwhelmed and anger, that these are umbrella feelings. So essentially what it's saying is your body's got feelings trapped in it and they're not being released. I mean, panic attacks is, I feel, is the body's way of, you know, there's just so much feeling trapped in the body. It's the body's way of just getting some air, some movement going. Yeah, just to kind of get a release.
Yeah.
So I think anxiety just says, look inside.
Yes.
I think stress says the same. Anger and irritability, I mean, again, often surface feelings. So look inside, go deeper. What's trapped in the body?
Yeah, opportunity to look and address. And I love that term, umbrella feeling.
Yeah. So sitting on the top, on the surface.
Yeah, fantastic. Allison, is there anything that I have not asked you today that you would love?
No, I think we've covered it all.
And we could probably cover a whole other few hours more on this topic, both near and dear to our hearts. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for this delightful opportunity.
Yeah,
really lovely to spend time with you and just really sort of peel back the mystery of this topic of trauma and how relevant it is in all of our lives.
Absolutely. Thank you for your brilliance, your generosity, that, you know, your thoughtfulness is massive, that you're such a contribution to the world and have written your books to share, and just really have your knowledge be available for all of us to consume is just, you know, just a huge testament to the amazing human that you are, that Zen stick.
Oh, that Zen stick. Well, I'm still perfecting it. I'm still deep in the trenches. So
Well, thank you so much. We'll sign off here and we'll, you know, level one trauma-informed practice is available. You have a course coming up May 15th.
And then I think the next one's June 27th. Essentially, they're every month and you can come as an individual to be curious about how to heal yourself, or you can come as an organization with enough colleagues in your organization to now bring this awareness into the organization. Or you can come as your role as a counselor, a teacher. We've had lawyers, we've had filmmakers, we've had police, yes, nurses, naturopaths, doctors. We've really, it's just so wide open on how, and nurses, how many people are gaining from this topic. So
thank you so much.
We're just thrilled to have people attend.
Amazing. And again, I can't iterate enough the safe environment and the opportunity to practice. So if it's not something someone has ever thought of doing before, you know, some people are, oh, health science is not for me. I'm a mathematician or an engineer, or, you know, and again, I just can't stress enough that your environment is so safe, so inviting, and there's so much permission to explore. So thanks for being that, creating that container for all of us.
Great. Well, wonderful. Great to chat, Tracy.
Yes.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Talk to Tea with the brilliant Allison Quinn. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe. And until we meet again, remember, always leave room for a little magic in your life.